Should we start every, or should we start this live stream as every live streamer starts, where they're just like, is this thing working? Are we live?
I mean, it's going right now.
Perfect. So, yeah. Ethan.
Yes.
We're live, man.
We are.
We just finished up the women's mass start from RuPolding. Super exciting race. And if you're tuning into our podcast, we're going to spoil it. Really good finish there for Julia Simone and Lisa Vitozzi and Naya Chevalier-Boucher. Who did you have on that last lap? Because they literally, all three of them left the race at the exact same time.
It was hard not to put your money on Simone.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of what we were talking about. We were watching on kind of what happened.
I mean, they had, I don't know, Simone has the yellow bib on, so it's kind of like you got to put your money on her. Obviously, yeah. Vitozzi had a really good weekend there with winning the individual earlier in the week. But that was a super exciting race. I'll say it. Till I die, biathlon mass start is the greatest event in sports.
Yes.
So, and that just proved right there. And we saw a really good one in the men's race as well.
Yeah.
So awesome. Welcome to our live stream here. this is our first time going live on YouTube. So we're not really sure how this works, but if, you know, for whatever reason we lose here with terrible Wi-Fi, sorry, but leave a comment in the comment section. There's a chat. Sorry, not a comment, but a chat. Leave a chat in the chat section, and we'll address some of the chats later on. So if you have a question, you want us to talk about something, you want to make a point towards something that we said, leave the chat there. And who knows, if this goes successfully, maybe we'll go live more often.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, yeah, we do have a small list of things to talk about just as the chat gets going, as people are filing in, but. First, U.S. men's relay team, 7th place in RuPolding this week. Super good race for them. Unfortunately, Maxime Germain, 2 penalties and prone. But you know what? As a younger guy on the team, one penalty, loop and prone. As a younger guy on the team, he needs this level of experience if he's going to be good long term.
Yeah.
And to have that high pressure situation in a situation where his teammates can back him up and they can still perform well and have a good result. I mean, it's almost the perfect opportunity the perfect time to fail if you're going to fail, you know?
Yeah. I think this is kind of a similar role that in previous years that the U.S. had put Sean in when he was young and coming on to the World Cup as the anchor leg and giving him the opportunity to learn and, you know, make mistakes some point along the road, but learn and get better as a biathlete. And I think that's the same thing they're doing with Maxime. And, you know, it went pretty well for Sean, and hopefully the U.S. can get back to posting top 7s, top 5s regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I think Maxime has a bright future in biathlon, despite not an ideal relay.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's been performing. I mean, he's had a couple World Cup starts already. Nothing too flashy. You know, he's still young. He's actually still a junior, so he will be going to Junior Worlds at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. But he's been doing really well on the IBU Cup as well, because I think he's even had a couple top 10s on the IBU Cup. He had a top 10 on the Junior Cup in Obertilliac that, for whatever reason, the schedule just worked out that he was going to go to the Junior Cup. I think it's a really good spot for, for him to come in and test himself in the against the world's best.
And
so
he held his own pretty good too. So we'll see what happens next relay. His next World Cup start. I'll just see what happens.
Yeah. I don't know. And then other than that, yeah, like you said, Paul and Jake and Sean, really, really good racing. They were in it the whole time. I mean, going into that last shooting for Maxime, he was in like 4th or 5th place, I think. So, it was just all around really good. And then also, I don't know if you saw on Paul's Instagram, he posted a video of Campbell Wright from New Zealand videoing the race.
Yeah.
And it was just really cool to see how excited all the coaches were, how excited Campbell was on the side of the trail. This team is a brotherhood, and they're working hard, and it's always cool to do well in the relay with, everyone around. So, really good day for the men's relay. What do you think? Let's say Maxime learns from this, and he becomes, or he, you know, shakes it off. Next time he's able to get in there and not have a penalty loop, because he also, I mean, we're not even acknowledging, he shot clean, 0-0, no spares in standing. So he was able to immediately bounce right back from that and have a good time, finish out the race strong. So in terms of mentality, that's exactly what you want to see in an athlete. But so what do you think? Let's say he can shake that one penalty off, assuming all the other teams are putting their best team forward for World Championships. What do you think? Are we looking at a flower ceremony at World Championships?
Maybe. I don't think the U.S. is able to make podium just with power of Norway, France, Sweden, Germany. But I think fifth and sixth is definitely possible. I think definitely what they'll be reaching for at World Champs in a few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Because who did they beat? Who were they in front of? Looks like they got in front of Finland, Slovenia, Poland, Austria. So Austria, obviously, that's going to be a strong one. The Czech team as well, they came in 15th. So the Czechs and the Austrians, even the Swiss, they beat a couple strong teams. Slovenia even, I think, could be up there. So, there's a couple strong teams behind them that maybe didn't have their best day. So, I mean, it's World Championships. You gotta perform your best, when it counts. So, I don't know. It's. I think if they can produce the same result that they just did on the right day, and then get rid of that one penalty loop, could be the U.S.'s day.
It could be. And I think it seems like they're kind of skiing faster as the season goes on, and having a little bit of time at altitude in Anholtsk before coming back down to World Champs and Overhof, I think could be really good for them too. Really excited to see what they can do at World Champs.
Yeah. All right, let's actually move on to the women's relay. Norway comes out of nowhere. I say comes out of nowhere. I mean, it's freaking Norway. Like, you have to put your money on them to do kind of well, right? But Norway was performing well, led by Ingrid Landmark Tandervold. Performing well. I think they did have a few podiums earlier in the year in relay events. But then suddenly, Marta Olsby-Roysen comes back, and they're winning the show. And granted, I don't think Julius Simon was racing for France, and France, I think, just in general, had a pretty good race.
Yeah.
But they beat a strong Italian team. They beat a strong Swedish team who didn't have Elvira Oyberg, but even still, they were on the penalty loop early on in the race, so they were kind of out of it. But it seems like Marta Olsby-Roysland was that little kick in the butt they needed to get over that hump in order to win the race.
And one thing looking at the results too is Norway only had six fair rounds, and they all came from one person. So three of their four athletes shot clean, which obviously really helped a lot. And it was interesting to see that they did not put Roysland on the last leg or the first leg. She was kind of the third leg to bridge, build the bridge the gap to give Tandervold the opportunity to ultimately win the race. I thought that was kind of an interesting move for the Norwegians.
Yeah. I guess looking at it now, I didn't realize that. Yeah. Knoten, Roysland, and Tandervold all shot clean, no spare rounds. And I mean, it doesn't matter what team you are, if you're Norway, Germany, Italy, Sweden, Switzerland, like, if you can do that, and not only avoid the penalty loop so much that you're not even using spare rounds, no matter what team you are, you're going to do well. So, I don't know. Okay, same question now. Let's go back. France has their best team on the line. Sweden has their best team on the line. Italy keeps performing the way they're doing. Even Germany, a really strong women's team. And Switzerland as well. I mean, there's a couple of really strong female teams on the female circuit right now. Does Norway win at World Championships? I mean,
that's a good question.
It's hard to get much better than that.
That's tricky.
Only six spare rounds.
Yeah. I think it's going to be hard to beat the Germans at home. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be pretty psyched up for that. I don't think they're going to win at World Champs, just because, like you said, Elvira Oyberg wasn't racing. Simone wasn't racing for France. And both France and Sweden were on the penalty loop. Usually doesn't happen. It happens more often than for Norway, but usually doesn't happen for them. And I think that's kind of the big difference maker. And kind of they shot themselves in the foot with those penalty loops. But I don't think that Norway will win at World Champs.
Yeah, I think it's hard pressed. I will say that Germany, though. I mean, I think Voigt is a shoe-in for good shooting, and you need that in a relay because that's the other thing too about relays that some people don't appreciate is that not only are you doing penalty loops if you miss, but also you having to load those three spare rounds. On average, in relays, you know, people are shooting closer to seconds per shooting, or if you have to use all three spare rounds, 45 seconds shooting, and you have a 25-second penalty loop on top of that if you miss. So the penalty for bad shooting in a relay is extra bad. And, like, I think that Germany has a few weak legs. And I say that cautiously because Anna Vidal and Sophia Schneider, they're both young, relatively inexperienced on the World Cup. And they've proven that they can have good results. They've both had really strong individual performances in the World Cup. And even Sophia Schneider, she was skiing crazy fast to start the season. So she kind of cooled off a little bit. Anna Vidal's been very consistent. But for whatever reason, in the relays, Sophia has not been able to put it together. And, like, she had four, both she and Anna had four spare rounds in the relay in RuPaul in this week. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if they can shoot a little bit better, and then, you know, Voigt and Herman can continue their good shooting, and then Herman, with, you know, being a strong skier on the last leg, I think they have all the pieces that it requires to win. But I just feel like the inconsistency in Schneider on the range is enough to not want to put all my money on them.
Yeah, I think they're kind of missing that second superstar that most of the other teams have. Like, they don't have a Vigor Vantozzi or Roslyn Tannenwald to kind of back up Herman in a sense.
Yeah.
Whereas if Herman doesn't have an exceptional race, they don't have the other piece to push them over the line.
Yeah, that's a really good good point, because even like Sweden, I mean, Sweden almost has two superstars plus two, you know, really high quality athletes. You know, take out Mona Berson and put in Elvira Oyberg, and I still think that Sweden is the team to beat, even though the last couple relays they haven't been as dominant. And then with France, with you have Julia Simon, who's a really good number one, and then any of those other girls could be a strong number two on any of those days. So, yeah, I think Voigt is she's a good number two. Like, I would totally take her as my number two if it was my nation, but she's not a standout superstar number two like you said with like Tannenwald, de Roslyn or Tudier. It's gonna be exciting.
I think next year, if or when Ekhoff comes back, I think it's hard not to bet on Norway.
Yeah.
Ekhoff comes back.
Yeah. And then you can't count out Italy either. I mean, Doro seems to be, you know, beating Father Time, and every year, like, I really thought she was going to retire after the Olympics. Yeah. She's starting to get a little bit older. Uh-huh. There's a new crew of young athletes coming in, but she continues to prove me wrong and continues to perform really well. Tozzi seems like she's back from wherever the heck she went last year to come back. And then you have these younger athletes, Passler and Kamala, who are doing well. Hanna Alcantara won the individual on the IBU Cup, so maybe she's fighting for a spot on the World Championship team. It's going to be interesting to see who Italy ends up bringing for their women.
Yeah.
We just keep going down. The Switzerland women too. Like, Baserga has been on a hot streak lately with her podium in the single mixed relay with Hartwig. Mm-hmm. And then Lena Hecki has always been a really strong, you know, number one or number two, depending on who you look at as their number one athlete. Gasper and sisters are consistent. You can count on them to be putting some quality races together. So here's a question. We were talking about this during the mass start because Lena Hecki was doing well there for a minute.
Yeah.
Like, do you see her, like, when is she finally going to make her breakthrough? Like, because I feel like she's the modern day Lisa Teresa Hauser, where she's right there. She's like 5 to 10th to 15th place. She just hasn't been able to break in there and get on the podium. And yeah, she has, but not consistently. And like, I don't know. When do you think she's going to be suddenly, you know, a favorite?
Yeah, I think probably next year or the year after. I think if she continues to, you know, keep shooting well, and if she keeps shooting well, eventually it's going to happen. Kind of like what happened for Lisa Teresa Hauser. But, you know, her best races right now are third, one third, fourth, fifth, sixth.
Yeah.
So she can she can definitely make the top 10 in any race, mm-hmm. but that the podium is kind of what she's reaching for. And I think if she keeps getting a little faster skiing, keeps shooting well, then eventually it's just going to happen.
Yeah. And actually, it's kind of crazy. Her shooting percentage is below standard, shooting 79%, so just under 80%. And it's her standing that's really killing her, so 74% in the stand. That's, I mean, we say it like the old saying in biathlon is, if you're going to miss early, mm-hmm. because you can come back from a penalty loop or two in like your first prone shooting. Yeah. But if you're going into the last standing, fighting for the lead, and you have two misses, you're done. You know, you don't have enough time to make that comeback. So, it's hopefully we can see her on the podium relatively soon. So, just a reminder: leave a question in the chat or a comment in the chat if you want to. And then once we're done talking about some of the other stuff that we have on our plate, we'll answer some questions. Let's see what we're going to talk about next. I mean, how about that men's start?
Yeah,
like, the hottest thing is Bo. I mean, you can't say enough about how strong he is right now. Like, he goes out incredibly hard, pushes the pace. The only person who really could stay with him was Christiansen. And I don't even know if Christiansen was staying with him because he thought that was the pace, or if that was really his strategy, where he was like, I'm going to stay with him and fight him. And where if he turned around at one point and was like, oh, crap, we're out here by ourselves. Because they put in on that first lap, they put in a solid, like, I don't know, 50-meter gap at least on the field. And then they proceed, both of them proceed to have a penalty loop. And then, again, catch right back up, shot clean, pull away, penalty loop. I'm just curious, like, what do you think was going through Bo's head today? Was he trying to – I have a couple theories, but yeah. Do you think he was trying to prove his dominance? Mm-hmm. Do you think he was trying to push the pace because he wanted to break everyone? Like, what was going through his head today?
I wonder if he's kind of at the point where when he was kind of breaking on the World Cup, mm-hmm. it was Bjørn Dalen had, and they were – when Bjørn Dalen was at his highest, he was blowing people away. No matter what he shot, it seemed like he could win. Kind of similar to Fourcade. If he missed two in the last standing, he could still pull back 20 seconds on anyone to win. And I wonder if he's kind of figuring out his different race strategies and how he can win. And because he knows if he has one more penalty loop, he can basically win any race on the World Cup. And that's exactly what happened today. Mm. With three misses and Christiansen Lygren had two. And I wonder if he was just trying something different, trying something new, knowing that he has that safety blanket of being able to ski absurdly fast. Yeah, that's my theory.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think we've seen this level of dominance. Like, granted, I can't go back too far. I keep waiting to see. I think there's rumor that we're in the same building as Chad Somla right now.
So
I'm hoping that Chad will walk by and we can call him over because he's got a wealth of knowledge. But, I can't remember a skier being this dominant and shooting as well as he is. Granted, he had three misses today. Probably wasn't super excited about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, his shooting percentage on the season is really good right now. So I can't remember a person being this dominant on skis and this good on the range. Yes, Fourcade really changed the game, I think, with his holistic biathlon approach, because Bjørn Dalen was a good skier. That's an understatement. Bjørn Dalen was a fantastic skier.
Yeah.
Not that great of a shooter, but so good he could pull away. Fourcade really became a more holistic biathlete, but this is like this is another level. I think the Johannes Tingesbo that we are seeing right now, compared to Martin Fourcade in his prime, Bo is better. That's just my opinion.
I think so too.
That's just my opinion too. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Leave a chat. But yeah, I don't know. It's I think I totally agree. I think he's trying to figure out what is the best approach for him. If he knows that he has this insane ski speed, and the other thing too is like, yeah, ski speed is a metric that we can look at and be like, yes, he's faster than everyone else. Something we can't measure is pain tolerance.
Yeah.
Maybe he was trying to see, or he has this innate ability to just fight through the pain, kind of like Jesse Diggins. This is his competitive advantage. He just wanted to prove to everyone or maybe flesh it out and see who else in that field has that tolerance to pain. Mm-hmm. And he's going to figure that out by just hammering and making everyone else suffer. And maybe Christiansen maybe he learned something about himself today where he felt, you know, oh, I'm just the guy that rides the, you know, pack, shoots well, moves over to the front. Yeah. Maybe Christensen learned today that he also has that pain tolerance. And who knows, maybe next mass start at World Champs, it's Christensen that pulls away and he's like, this is how I race. So,
maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's when I was watching it live, I was thinking maybe he's a little jealous that everyone's been talking about Lampage recently and how she's absolutely dominant. She's been on the skis and she just wants – he wants to prove to everyone that he is, you know, as dominant of a skier as Lampage. So, I don't know. I haven't been able to watch the pre-race – the post-race interview yet, but I'm really fascinated to see what he says because it was a true show of dominance out there. Even though he didn't perform the best of his ability with three penalty loops, it was – I don't know. It's like – it really cemented for me that everyone else is competing for third place, second place.
Yeah.
I mean, Liger came in third, so he's up there. But yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny watching the men's biathlon races at this point because it's exciting until you want to see his bogos. Mm. Watching everyone competing for second or third, depending on how Liger does on any given day, but. Mm-hmm. You're right. When you're talking about the comparison to Martin Fourcade, this does feel different. Mm. And it does feel like it's a little bit more that we're waiting for. In terms of wins and success, I think Johannes Ingesbo is more all-around biathlete, and he kind of ski himself out of some bigger holes that Fourcade might not have been able to.
Right.
Whereas Fourcade's dominance over 7 years winning the overall in a row, I don't know if Johannes Ingesbo can replicate that, especially with the past 2 years where he wasn't quite on it.
I don't know. When Fourcade was at his prime, it seemed like he was winning every single race. There's something about it that, to me, just I was like, kind of like boring. Like I was kind of bored of it, and I kind of started to resent Fourcade because I was like, he's just winning everything.
Yeah.
But there's something about Bo, and maybe I'm just a French hater. And I, you know, I just love the Norwegians. I don't know. Maybe it's something subconscious, but there's something about Bo this year where I'm like, no, I want to see how much he can win by. I want to see how much he can put the pedal to the metal, and just make everyone else hurt.
Yeah,
because it's I don't know.
It almost feels like he's changing biathlon in a way. Every mass start previously is like just get to the first shooting, everyone's together, and then the race starts.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's why not start the race 3K sooner?
Well, this is actually really interesting because people brought this up when Lampage had that crazy good race on her first race ever. Mm-hmm. The question was like, why are they changing biathlon? And there was a lot of controversy. Like, you know, this is going to hurt the integrity of the sport because it's a dual sport. Mm-hmm. And if you can just do skiing really well, then the shooting might not matter as much. So there's talk of like, should we make penalty loop bigger? Like, I don't know. I think this is just going to raise the level. It's like the same way when people started shooting faster. Yeah. There was talk like, oh, are we going to, are they going to, you know, make the target smaller? Are they going to, you know, try and make it harder on the shooters? No, I think the standard is just going to become higher. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great. Like, I would love to see Johannes Ingesbo jump into a fifth race, a cross-country race, just to see how he would stack up against those other Norwegian guys. Because, like, I'll say it, you know, I say it to every single junior athlete who wants to become a biathlete. Like, the faster year wins a biathlon race, and you can make up for poor shooting performances. You can make up for poor skiing performances, and so hopefully this will just prove that, you know, all those athletes out there who are, you know, younger athlete, junior, making their way in the field. Mm-hmm. Can I, you know, how do I become a better biathlete? Get out there and train. Get out mm-hmm. there and put time in on ski, on foot, on the bike, and just build your base. Become a faster skier, and you're gonna have way better advantage.
Yeah,
next time you race.
You can always, it takes years to build up your ski speed, but your shooting, you can make huge gains in a month or a week, whatever it may be. Maybe not huge gains in a week, but it takes more time to develop your skiing.
Yeah.
And shooting, you can figure out later on too.
Yep. Should we take a question from the chat?
Yeah.
All right. None of these questions really pertain to what we're talking about, so let's just go with this one. What would happen if a coach from a different team runs into an athlete on course and causes the athlete to fall or impedes them? Sometimes the coach gets close. And that does happen.
Mm-hmm.
it's not very often, but it does happen on occasion. And more often it happens when a coach will run into their own athlete.
Yeah.
I remember specifically it European Championships, basically like the championships for the IBU Cup. Renny Zakna was the local guy. They were in Otepää, Estonia, local Estonian. I think he was in second place, and he was catching the guy in front of him, and he was catching him on the last lap. Like, probably going to win this race in front of his home crowd, be a hero. And the coach was so animated, running next to him and screaming at him. He stepped on his ski. Zakna went down, ended up coming in second place still. Mm-hmm. Very proud. And I remember I heard a press release after the race. The coach felt horrible. He knew that he ruined the race for not only Renny, but all the fans that came out to watch. That does happen. I mean, in that instance, nothing's going to happen because it was just one coach, doing it to his own athlete. But if another coach ran into that athlete, that coach would probably be sanctioned at some point, and maybe the IBU. Yeah, and here's the great thing about the IBU is the IBU really promotes fairness. So if they fell, and like we saw Lisa Treisterhauser fall today during the match start, they would probably go back and watch the film, figure out how much time that athlete lost, maybe tack on a few extra seconds for lost momentum or something like that, and then just give them that as a time credit. And then they would probably come sanction that coach later, and whether it's they pull their bib so they can't go out on course next race or for the remainder of the weekend, or if it was really egregious, like if it was like intentional, they would probably kick him off the circuit for a little bit. I don't really know how that works. Maybe if we see Max Cobb walk by, we can ask him.
I was gonna say.
Yeah, we're in Lake Placid right now at the World University Games. Ethan's brother is competing for the U.S. in the biathlon competition, so that's why we're here together in person. So a lot of big names in the U.S. biathlon community walking around in this building right now, promoting the event. And honestly, so far, it's been a pretty exciting event. Unfortunately, the U.S. team didn't shoot that well yesterday, so hopefully they can come back with some better shooting later on. But this event is way bigger than I expected.
Yeah.
There's security. They're checking credentials. They're not allowing me on course to cheer for people, so it's killing me. But no, it's been really fun so far, and hopefully for the rest of the week, both Nordic and biathlon teams can do well. Another question. What do you think about a system if they don't bring back the crossing out races, where if you miss a race, get coins corresponded to your worst placement minus one? That's a good idea. I think it's stupid that they got rid of the drop the worst score, because if you can pull up the overall standings again, like Elvira Oyberg is not racing the mass start today due to illness. Hannah Oyberg missed a couple of races in Hokkaido due to illness, and now their chances of winning, I don't even want to say winning. I think their chances of coming back and winning the overall are almost gone. All Julia Simone really needs to do with the new point system and how favorable it is to the top athletes, all that she really needs to do is like finish the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Like as long as she doesn't have 0 points in any of the races, all she really has to do is stay ahead. I think it's stupid because, COVID's like, we're done with COVID, but COVID's not gone. You have athletes that keep getting tired and, they want to take a break to, rest and recover, because when you're racing 3 times, 4 times a weekend, every single weekend for the entire season, that just completely wears you out. And if you, sometimes athletes need to take a break.
Yeah.
And if you're not, allowing them to take the break, they're going to get tired, they're going to get sick, and then all of a sudden you have literally your number two in the world got sick because she couldn't take a break, and now she's not there, and she's not racing one of the 4 mass starts that you have this season.
Yeah.
And so that's just a bad look on the IBU, because you don't have one of your, your best athletes racing.
Yeah.
And Bo has been pretty vocal about this. Johannes Fingus has been vocal about this, wanting to make sure that, or wanting them to bring that back, because he, just for all the same reasons I mentioned, he doesn't want to, miss points for being sick or being tired, or maybe there's a family thing that happens up, like, yeah, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But mm-hmm. so maybe, and that's kind of my theory, is like, maybe he's just going super hard, you know, at the beginning of the season, yeah, winning all these races in a row, so that way he can like take a break and not feel guilty about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
I think they should bring it back, because, you know, it's hard racing all whole season, and you know, you shouldn't get knocked if you're sick one weekend or taking it careful or just need some time or space away from the sport. That happens to everybody, and they should be willing to support that, especially if, like, Johannes Kingsbo last year didn't compete after the Olympics because he just needed time away, and like that was kind of his thing. And you know, obviously he kind of threw in the towel on trying to win the overall that season, but like, things like that happen, and especially at the top level.
Unfortunately, I think he threw in the towel trying to win that season when he realized he wasn't starting off very great. Remember last That's year true. When the Norwegians started off so poorly, yeah, and like for some reason, like everyone was like, "Oh my God, how are they going to do the Olympics? Like, are they going to be able to survive?" Yeah, they were fine. okay, here's a good one. Yeah. Who is the most underrated female athlete? I'll let you go first.
I'm gonna say Tanner Vold.
This is a good spare round question, by the way.
Yeah, this is a good one. Yeah. I'm gonna say Tanner Vold. I think she has. He has one podium, and doesn't have that win yet, right?
I think she has a win.
She has one win?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pull it up.
Okay, well, I'll pull it up. Yeah. But anyway, she's always been overshadowed by Roizland and Pickoff recently, but she's always had, you know, fantastic results. You know, she skis fast, she shoots well, she shoots relatively well. But no, she's always been an exciting athlete to watch, and I'm always find myself rooting for her in the World Cup when I'm watching the races. And
there's a win.
Yep. Yeah, it's always exciting to watch her race, and I think she gets to break through and take that next step on the podium, especially with Brislin Neckhoff, the Norwegian team. What athlete to watch?
Yeah, I agree, and she's feisty too. She's always fighting. I'm gonna go my most underrated athlete. We already talked about her a little bit, was Lena Hecky. Looking at the overall stage right now, Lena is not even ranked in the top 20.
21st.
There she is, 21st. So, I think 21st is low for her. Yeah. I'm actually honestly a little bit surprised by that, because she just always seems like she's there. She's in the fight. Granted, we said she has one podium. I think she has one third place, and then a bunch of top 10. So in terms of underrated, I think she's the top underrated athlete. We saw earlier her shooting percentage is poor, to put it politely. She really needs to bump up her standing percentage, because she's throwing away great races but shooting late in the race. So if she can bump up her standing percentage, there's no reason, honestly, I would favor Lena Hecky over Lisa Teresa Hauser if Hecky was able to bump her standing shooting up even by 5%, one extra hit per race in standing, and I would favor her over Hauser. Hauser currently ranks 7th. So that's just me personally. Again, another one who's a fighter. She will fight to the line, and we saw that when she got in front of Denise Herman in the was that the mixed relay, or maybe it was a person in Pope Luca. They, you know, Herman sort of double pulled to the line, and Hecky was able to jump right in front of her. So she's going to fight for every spot, whether she's fighting for the podium or fighting for 20th place. So I really like Lena Hecky. And, yeah, hopefully she can have a breakout sometime soon. Another question. Should they make group placement of athletes more random, especially in the individual?
Good question.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, basically how it happens is there's groups within the start list. And it's funny, because I get this question all the time where they're like, why does it always seem like some of our favorite athletes are starting top each other? Or like, why does certain athletes always get bib one? Basically, what they do is each team gets a start seed. So if you're a big team like Norway, you get to put, I think, 2 people in any seed that you want. If you're a smaller team like the U.S. and you only have 4 athletes on the inside, then you get to put 1 person in each seed. You get to decide who goes first. So looking at the weather tomorrow, and it's like, oh, it's going to be nice and clear and fast to start the day, but then there's a big snowstorm coming in, and the late starters are going to get, you know, snowed on. I might put my best athlete in the first seed, highway, they have the fast track in order to have the best advantage. Bigger teams like Norway, obviously, there's a little bit more strategy involved because everyone on their team is good. But not saying that people in the U.S. are bad, but it's just anyone on the Norwegian team has a chance to win any day. So you have to be a little bit more strategic with how they do it. So what ends up happening is all the best athletes end up going in the same seed because it's pretty standard, I'd say. Like most people know, like, oh yeah, weather's good, weather's bad. Give people, you know, good start spots or later start spots, earlier start spots, later start spots. So, within that, they randomize the order. So that's how you can get, like, if Norway, for example, got the last randomized spot in the first seed and their athlete is 25, but then randomly they got the first order in the second start spot, that's how you can have like two Norwegian athletes back to back. I don't know. I don't know how you can make it more random if they're using like a random number generator or whatever. Random is random. Maybe what you could do is open up the field to be like two start seeds together and randomize that. So now it's 25 random, and then 25 random, you have 50 random.
Yeah.
But no, I think for the most part, it truly is random with the, with like what I said, there's the seeding.
One thing that might be interesting too is what the cross country World Cup does. So they kind of, the first 15 or so people are those that are not ranked at the top. And then the next chunk is split up with one of the top, say like top 30 athletes, and then someone that's towards the bottom, and then top 30, then someone else towards the bottom. Just to kind of have them all be together, but not like falling on top of each other for like a bad race. Mm. That could be interesting, but it is cool to have the groups. I like it. Mm. Like you're saying, maybe go to two groups instead of four.
Yeah.
That would kind of make it, open it up a little bit more for more variability.
I will say sometimes it is annoying when like all the best athletes are like bid 1-20.
Yeah.
And then after they finish, it's like we're watching some random person finish in like 30th place because that's the most exciting thing happening right now. So that is a little annoying. And I do like how sometimes for the Nordic events, but they literally just take the standings and put them in reverse order, and then they have all the best athletes go out last. So it really is truly exciting to see if like some of the earlier athletes can hold on, or if you know, some of the better athletes based on points can hold through. So I think it would be cool if they did do that for one race, like a race where there is like really good conditions, no weather expected, and it just said, we're taking the start list. Or we're taking them at the standings and we're flipping them backwards and we're just saying ready to go.
Yeah.
And then do like a sprint or something like that.
Do you know people would watch to see Johannes Vingegaard or Julius Simon and over here or over again?
Yeah. Good question. All right. We'll take two more questions and we're gonna go because I think people are starting to come back inside and it's starting to get a little noisy. So we got a question here. Which U.S. biathlete has the most potential? I mean, that's really tough to say. I mean, the team is relatively young. I mean, Maxime Germain is still a junior, like you said earlier, and he got some really good experience in the relay this year, this week. I mean, it's hard to say potential. I mean, just based on that, I'm going to go with Maxime because he's the youngest, and he's performing just as well as his teammates. I don't know how to define the potential, but I'll just go with Maxime.
Probably the most glaring, obvious choice.
Oh, wait. There's that one guy, Nate Livingston.
No, that's my brother.
Ethan's brother's a youth athlete, so he's going to get his first piece of international competition at Junior Worlds later this year. So we'll re-answer that question.
Yeah. We'll wait to see after this season, maybe in our last podcast, do a season overview or something.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Hey, last question, then we got to wrap up here. Yeah. Are there stats on how far off center shots are? I feel like Johannes and Elvira have been a bit lucky in the range this season. It would be interesting to get that on. That would be fascinating.
That would be really cool.
Maybe. I'll have to go back and check. So go follow me on Twitter, and I'll maybe tweet about it if I can find something. Yeah. But these targets these days are – the targets these days are so accurate in terms of time and it's really mostly just time because they can tell you the time between each shot. But I would not be surprised if there was some sort of like echo system in the target that can give you a score for the target. Because I know they do have an electronic target system that comes with a little computer screen that sits up right next to the mat.
Yeah.
So you can shoot at a metal target and then look at the computer screen and see where your shots were if you were shooting on paper. The U.S. has some of those here in Lake Placid, but they're super, super expensive, as you can imagine. So I doubt someone is building a full 30-point range of those style targets, but that would be fascinating to know, because I agree with this person. There were a few times where, like, a leader is having split shots in order to finish out the race. So, that would be fascinating to know, because that would also be cool to be like, hey, if on average on the World Cup an athlete is scoring, say, out of 5 shots in a prone shooting, 50 being a perfect shot, or, sorry, 50 being a perfect 10 ring for 5 shots, and an 8 ring is about the size of the prone ring, if a World Cup athlete is shooting about like 45 or so, and then like you can't even shoot a 50 on paper with no pulse, it might be a little eye-opening for the athlete to know, like, hey, I can't even achieve this standard without a pulse. I got to be able to do it with a pulse. So that'd be really interesting. Maybe we can go back and try to find some data on that.
It'd be cool too, because in biofilm, I think it's so black and white, like, hit the target, you don't. But the better you can hit the target, then the less chance you have of missing on it, if that makes sense. I think that'd be really cool. I feel like the World Cup athletes too would be interested to know that.
Oh, yeah.
See what they can work on the summer.
And one final thing I'll say about that is, back in the day, back when they had the Olympics here in Lake Placid, the individual race was scored on a paper target. You did not know how you were doing during the race, because they had to score the targets after the race.
Yeah.
And also, they had a hit, obviously, if you're in the black. They had a 1-minute penalty, and then they also had a 2-minute penalty if your shot was way out.
Yeah.
So that would be cool if maybe on the World Cup they gave you like a 75-meter penalty loop, and they're like, hey, that was a split shot. You got to do the 75-meter penalty loop. But, you know, that was a good clean hit. You can just leave.
I think we might have seen a few 2-minute penalties.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Ethan, that was our first live podcast. Yeah. I think it went really well. I just want to switch over to this graphic I made, just to give a shout out to all my patrons on Patreon. I don't want to leave this up too long, because I don't want the IBU to come after me for stealing their design or anything like that.
I'll let you know if Max Cobb comes up.
Yeah. Let me know. Live podcast, I think it went pretty well. We had a little bit of engagement from the listeners. So maybe we'll do this again, and we'll get some more engagement.
Yeah.
But if you haven't done so already, hit that subscribe button. You can find this podcast on all the platforms you get your podcasts, whether it's Spotify, Apple, Google, any other podcast platform. Yeah. And we'll be back next week.
Yeah.
And we got On Holtz next week, and then lead up to World Championships. There may or may not be a special podcast coming out for World Championships or the lead up to World Championships, so keep an eye out for that. But until next time, see ya.